George Friedman, Director of Arbitration at FINRA Dispute Resolution. Thank you for listening to our workshop called FINRA Mediation Redesign 2009. Before we explore our main topic, I'd like to introduce our faculty and update you on case filings, new rules, and proposed rule filings. Firstly, faculty. Joining us here this afternoon are the following faculty: Ken Andertick. Ken is Senior VP and Chief Counsel and also Director of Mediation and Business Strategy. So basically, he's involved in everything we do. Also here today, Julie Crotty. Julie is Assistant Director of Mediation. Next, Leon DeLeon. He's National Mediation Administrator down in our Boca Raton Mediation Region. Rosari Dominic, Senior Mediation Administrator of the Chicago Mediation Region. And last but not least here joining us today is Ed Sahaga, Senior Mediation Administrator for the New York Mediation Region. So I think we've got our mediation regions covered.
Yep.
Before we begin, as a preliminary matter, you can view all of the materials referenced in today's workshop by clicking on the links right below the audio file that you just downloaded from our website. As we go through the program today, we'll let you know when we come to a topic that's referenced in those materials that you might want to look at a bit later. All right, first, an update on arbitration filings. Now, to start, you can see the case statistics as the first link below the audio file. They're called FINRA Dispute Resolution Statistics. We got really creative with that name. Now, here we are in the summertime. And our office here in Liberty Plaza is not too far from Coney Island. In fact, on a clear day, you can see Coney Island. And as you might know, there's a famous roller coaster called the Cyclone at Coney Island. And it goes up and down. And we are in the middle of the roller coaster ride here with our case filings. My colleagues here are saying, where's he going with this? But our case filing tends to look like the Cyclone roller coaster. And if you want to figure out whether it's going to be a dip or a rise, you basically look at how the Dow is doing, because the Dow's going up, we're going down. That's probably an oversimplification, but our business is countercyclical to the markets. I mean, simply put, as the capital markets do well, people don't fight so much, and our caseload declines. Unfortunately, as I'm sure you've all experienced, as the capital markets and frankly the economy in general doesn't do well, people tend to have more disputes about money, and as a result, our caseload goes up. So what does that mean? Well, the height of the cyclone here, the roller coaster ride, was 2003. Now, that followed the market meltdown in 2000, the so-called tech wreck, the analyst problems that came a few years later, and in 2003, our caseload peaked at 9,000 case filings. I'm rounding the numbers, and you can look at the exact numbers. Those who are already clicking on the link, don't email me and tell me I got it wrong, but the approximate number is about 9,000 in 2003. And then we began to decline. Capital markets improved, things got better, and our caseload declined to a low of about 3,000 cases in 2007. And we began that ride up to the top of the roller coaster peak. Caseload started to go up, not surprisingly, as things declined, as the situation in the capital markets and the economy in general declined. So caseload went up to 5,000 last year in 2008, and we are on track. Not that this is an ironclad prediction, but we're tracking toward the high 7,000s, perhaps even 8,000 this year. Just doing the math to get some specific numbers here, we at the halfway mark of this year, through June, we had about 3,900 cases. My colleagues will tell you math is not my strong suit, but I think you just double that on a straight line basis, and that would tell you that we'll be close to 8,000 for the year. We're running about 81% ahead of last year, and that's not surprising. Customer claims are up over 100%. So when I said we're up about 81%, that includes all cases, including those intra-industry disputes. But if you look at customer claims, we're up about 100%. So case filings are increasing. And two of the major components driving that are cases involving subprime mortgages and auction rate securities. No surprise. Significant rule changes. My colleague Ken Andertick will start us off by talking about some recent rule changes here at FINRA. Now, the link to the rule filings is, again, right below the audio file you've already clicked on here, and it's the link entitled FINRA 2009 rule filings. Ken?
Yeah, thanks, George. The first rule change that I want to explain is the increased single arbitrator threshold. In order to increase efficiencies and decrease costs to the parties, FINRA amended Customer Code Rule Number 12401 and the Industry Code Rule Number 13401, raising the amount of controversy that will be heard by a single chair-qualified arbitrator up to $100,000. So this means a single arbitrator will continue to decide claims up to $25,000 based on the written submissions. But the new rule mandates a single arbitrator in all cases with an amount in dispute between $25,000 and $100,000 unless all the parties agree in writing to request a three-person panel. Now, that rule was effective for all cases filed on or after March 30th, 2009. So we'll start to see those move through the arbitration process. The next one is relating to explained decisions. In February, the SEC approved a rule change to require arbitrators to provide written explanations in arbitration awards when all parties agree. Honoring the parties' joint request for an explained decision is consistent with FINRA's general policy to accommodate agreements of parties. Now, that new rule was effective on April 13, 2009, and it provides that the chairperson is going to write the explained decision. That explained decision will be a fact-based award stating the general reasons for the arbitrator's decision. The award does not have to include legal authorities or damage calculations. And we've updated our arbitrator training courses to include guidance for arbitrators when they're preparing an explained decision. That online course and others are available, again, at the link that's below the audio file. It's labeled FINRA Arbitrator Training. And George is going to cover now a couple of the pending rule changes. Those are in the pipeline.
Yes, we have a couple of rule filings that have actually been approved and are awaiting implementation. I should start by answering one question we get, which is very often when a rule is approved, someone says, well, it's in effect, right? And the answer is not yet. And that these two rules I'm about to describe are in that not yet category. After the commission approves a rule, the next step is FINRA has to publish what's called a regulatory notice. We have to do that within 60 days after the SEC approval order. And once we do that, again, within 60 days, not exactly, doesn't have to be exactly, but within 60 days, once we do that, it then sets the effective date, which has to be 30 days later. So we're kind of in that period right now on these rules. Let me just briefly describe them. The SEC recently approved a proposal to simplify the panel composition rules for intra-industry cases that involve associated persons. The old rule required that we appoint a non-public panel in these cases if the case related exclusively, and I underscore that term, exclusively to employment contracts, promissory notes, or receipt of commissions. So under the old rule, it's technically the current rule, and I haven't changed it yet, but we appointed a non-public panel if the case only involved employment contracts, promissory notes, or receipt of commissions. Well, very often, somebody would plead a tort claim or something along those lines, and then therefore the case did not exclusively relate to employment contracts and promissory notes, etc. And then we'd appoint a majority public panel. There was some game playing going on, frankly, so we decided to address this by having a really clear rule that sets establishes an objective standard for determining panel composition, and it essentially ensures that the panel composition is determined by the types of parties involved and not the types of claims being filed. So at a really high level, under the new rule, for all cases that name an individual broker, the case has a majority public panel. It's pretty straightforward. You know, if the case involves an individual broker, it's a majority public panel, which means two public arbitrators and one non-public. As a side note, cases with statutory discrimination claims continue to have a specialized all-public panel. That's not what we're talking about today. So the SEC approved the rule on June 5th, which means, Clash, that we have to do a regulatory notice in the next 60 days, and that'll establish the effective date 30 days thereafter. So fairly soon we'll be publishing a regulatory notice. The other rule that was recently approved involved promissory note cases. The SEC also approved that rule in the recent past, and it's establishes a procedure to expedite these cases, promissory note cases, and only promissory note cases that don't involve additional allegations by the firm or counterclaims by the employee. So the new rule provides that in most situations, a single public arbitrator from the specialized roster that hears statutory discrimination claims will decide these cases based on written submissions. So essentially, in plain English, what this means, if it's a promissory note case, and that's all we're dealing with, promissory note case, no counterclaim, no additional allegations, a pure promissory note case, then there's a single public arbitrator from the specialized roster for statutory discrimination claims who's going to decide these cases usually on documents only, but that depends. The SEC approved the new rule on June 17th. We'll issue a regulatory notice shortly that announces the effective date. And again, you get all kinds of details. I went at a really high level here at the link, FINRA-2009 rule filings, which is below the audio file. One last note to talk about, this is an administrative note, I think will be of some interest to neutrals. You can now arrange with FINRA to have your fees or expense reimbursements directly deposited to your personal checking account. Underscore personal. We can't make direct deposits to corporate or firm bank accounts, but you can arrange again to have your arbitrator compensation or expenses sent directly to your personal checking account by direct deposit. Underscore, this is entirely voluntary. If you like getting checks, you can continue to do that. If you'd like to participate, you'll need to execute a non-employee direct deposit form. The link, again, is below the audio file. It's called FINRA Forms and Tools. And you fill out that form, and then you can arrange for direct deposits, which, you know, is a little commercial here. It's faster and less cumbersome, obviously, than getting a check. But again, it's a voluntary program. Now Ken will lead the discussion for today's main event, which is a workshop discussion on our mediation program and our recent redesign of that program. Ken?
Great. I want to take you back to the beginning. FINRA introduced its mediation program in 1995, and since that time, we've administered thousands of cases involving a wide variety of securities disputes, with over 80% resulting in settlement. At the beginning, our main focus was to develop a roster of outstanding mediators and to educate the parties and their representatives about the option and the benefits of mediating their disputes. We've evolved a bit, and at this stage, we have a roster of sophisticated, quality mediators, and the parties are now comfortable with mediation. So we're shifting our focus to demonstrate to parties and to mediators the value of mediating through the FINRA forum. And this is important because, one, to have an effective program, we have to recoup the costs of the resources that we expend in building and maintaining our quality roster and marketing to the parties and their representatives both the mediation option and really our mediators. Another issue of concern is that we found sometimes parties will mediate with our mediators but outside of our forum, and then they'll take issue with how the process was handled. Those mediations are not FINRA-sponsored mediations, and we'd like our mediators to come through FINRA so that we can manage the quality of the process better and avoid confusion and potential risks to parties who think they're mediating in our forum when they're really not. In essence, we're working hard to identify quality mediators, ensure a fair process for the parties, and generate cases for our mediators by keeping our mediators in the process on the parties' minds. So this workshop is going to let FINRA mediators know about a couple of things, new financial and other incentives we're launching in order to encourage those mediators to handle all of their securities cases with us, and the valuable role that FINRA mediation staff plays in assisting our mediators with their cases. So first, we're going to briefly describe becoming a FINRA mediator, followed by an explanation of the changes we're making to our program, including how we're going to simplify our fees to benefit mediators. And we'll describe some of the many incentives we're offering to our mediators to bring their securities cases through our forum. A lot of you may not be aware of all the proactive work our mediation staff does on a regular basis to encourage parties to mediate securities disputes. But first, I'm going to take us back and talk about becoming a FINRA mediator. I'm going to start with Assistant Director of Mediation, Julie Crotty, who oversees our mediator application process. Julie, FINRA's roster of mediators has always been selective. Can you give us an overview of that application process?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Ken. We often get calls from arbitrators on our roster who are interested in joining our mediator roster, or they're interested in learning about how to develop their skills so that they can apply to our roster when they're ready. This workshop gives us a great opportunity to describe what it is that we are looking for in our mediators. Right now, we have over 1,000 mediators on our roster, and we have enough skilled mediators in most cities around the country. But we are always looking to add mediators with the right skills and experience, and those who contribute to the diversity of the roster by adding different cultural backgrounds or language skills, or who are based in underserved locations. To be brief, we're always looking to add more mediators who will meet the needs of the parties. It's really a party-driven forum. And the parties and the representatives in FINRA cases generally want highly experienced mediators with expertise that is specifically in securities or in employment issues, because those are the types of cases that we have. So they're looking for people that they can trust to know what they're doing as mediators within the context of the securities field. The parties and the representatives tend to be risk-averse, and they tend to want to work with mediators that they know or who their colleagues know or will recommend. So we screen our mediators carefully. We're looking for mediator training and experience in securities or employment disputes. It can be hard to get experience mediating securities cases. We are aware of that. It's that catch-22 of how do I break into the field. So we also do look for mediators that have subject matter knowledge in securities or employment. So they may have a working background in securities or in employment issues, but who get their mediation training and experience in other business-related areas or specifically in employment disputes. The parties do tend to avoid mediators with experience that's really what they would consider to be non-related areas, such as divorce or family or community mediation experience. So it's very important to try to get business-related experience if you're getting mediation experience. We do screen our potential applicants because the applications are detailed, just like for those of you who filled out your arbitrator application, you know that they can be a bit cumbersome. And they do take time to complete. So we review the applicants' resumes and backgrounds and send applications to people that we think have a chance at being accepted. Basically, we're trying to set you all up for success and to give you, you know, maximize your use of your time. The part of our application that takes the most time is providing four letters of reference, and we ask that they mostly come from people who've actually participated in mediations that the applicant has conducted. So we're not looking for character references, we're looking for people who've seen people mediating from the inside so we can get a real account of what their skills are like. And then FINRA has an advisory committee, which is the National Arbitration and Mediation Committee, otherwise known as the NAMC. And this committee reviews and must approve all of our mediator applications. And since our forum is overseen by the SEC, we can't make exceptions to our application requirements. And just to give you a sense of how competitive the process is, we had many requests for information about joining our roster throughout 2008, but we only added 20 new mediators to our roster last year.
I imagine, Julie, that's why people can't find the mediator application on the webpage as opposed to the arbitrator application, which is there.
Absolutely, because we really don't want to frustrate people where they pull it off the website, fill it out, take the time to do it, and then we have to coach them or tell them that they're not ready. So we really try to make sure people are ready to apply for the roster before we give them the application. But thanks, George. We're primarily looking for mediators in specific areas where we're underserved. So if you think that you meet our criteria, and if you're interested in applying to become a FINRA mediator, please visit our dispute resolution website. And we have provided a link with this presentation where you can look up the locations where we need more mediators, and you can also review our application requirements. You can email us as well through this link to get an application or to ask questions, because you may look at the information and want to ask us more about, you know, what we're looking for or what's required. That link is FINRA Become a Mediator. And if you'd like to become a mediator but you're just getting started, you can get really valuable mediation experience and training in a lot of different places, such as court-sponsored programs, university programs, or through other mediation programs. And very often you can find them literally by doing a Google search to find ones that are local to your area.
Great. Thanks, Julie. That's good advice. I want to shift the topic now to the one that I think will interest our mediators the most and tell them about the changes we're making that are going to simplify and reduce the overall fees we deduct from our mediators.
Sounds good. I'm going to start by giving a brief background. We have done a lot of research to determine the needs of the people that we serve. We've met with some of our mediators and held focus groups with attorneys who represent parties, and we distributed a survey to over 600 attorneys who frequently bring cases through our forum. We learned a lot of positive things, which was good news for us. We found that the parties value mediation, and they do use it frequently, as many of you know. And they also expect to mediate more cases in the future. And they like the quality of our mediators. So specifically, they did recognize that there's quality associated with FINRA mediators. And we did find that really encouraging to see that they're getting more comfortable with the process and are looking to use it more in the future. We did decide that we needed to find incentives to encourage the parties and our mediators to mediate their securities cases through our program. And the members of the advisory group, the National Arbitration and Mediation Committee, suggested that we simplify our mediator fees. So we are going to start that on September 1st. As many of you in our audience know, our mediators usually charge an hourly rate. FINRA currently charges mediators an hourly fee of $25 to $50 per hour for each mediation that they conduct out of their mediator rate. But starting on September 1st, we will not deduct an hourly fee from mediators. Instead, we're going to charge a small flat fee of $150 per case. This flat fee of $150 per mediation will almost always be lower than what the mediators would have paid with the previous hourly fee structure. Just to give you an example, a mediator who charges $250 per hour will pay FINRA just $150 for the case instead of if they did a typical 10-hour mediation under the way we have been charging the fees, they'd end up paying $500 for the entire mediation session. And most of our mediators will be able to cover this fee from their compensation for less than an hour of each mediation. In smaller cases, and those are cases that involve claims of $25,000 or less, the mediators typically charge less of the parties in order to enable the parties to afford the mediation. And FINRA will not deduct any fees in those cases. So this new simplified approach will allow our active mediators to retain more of the hourly fees they charge the parties. And we still do have costs that are associated with managing our mediator roster and the cases, and also with promoting our mediators and the program. So starting on September 1st, we're also going to charge FINRA mediators a moderate annual fee of $200 to help cover those costs. We tried to keep the annual fee lower than typical state bar dues and other similar fees. Our goal was to keep it manageable for mediators while enabling us to effectively cover the costs of the services that we provide our mediators. Now, we do realize that the parties are not selecting all of the mediators on our roster, but we still have expenses associating with managing the roster each year. These expenses include the maintenance of our roster of mediator profiles and marketing expenses, as well as monitoring the quality of the roster. We encourage all of the mediators on our roster to remain on the roster and to pay the annual fee. And we do strive to provide incentives for all of our mediators to stay with FINRA. We'll mail a letter to each of our mediators with instructions on how to pay the fee, and we also are offering an easy way to pay the fee on our website.
All right, well, that was a nice summary of our new simplified fee structure for mediators. In essence, a flat fee of $150 per case, combined with the annual fee of $200, and that will be starting September 1st. So I think this is a good time to explain to our mediators the benefits of remaining on our roster and the incentives we have in place for them.
Sure. I'm going to quickly describe the benefits of being on the FINRA, being a FINRA mediator, and I want to make sure that all of our mediators are aware of the advantages of being on our roster and mediating through our forum. To begin with, we pay our mediators immediately after they submit a simple payment form that we provide, so they don't have to provide their own invoices anymore. And we started doing this in September of last year to give more incentives for our mediators to mediate through FINRA. So we're now taking on all the collection responsibilities and the risks of parties not paying, and the mediators don't have to wait anymore for the parties to pay. So our mediators can focus on doing their job well and can rest assured that they're going to be paid promptly for their work each time they mediate a FINRA case. Our mediators also report that they're very happy with the new system of paying them promptly after each mediation. So we were pleased to learn that, or hear that positive feedback.
Not surprising.
Yeah, exactly.
So, just to be clear,
yeah.
In the old days, you know, we would process the mediator's bill, but ultimately the risk of nonpayment fell on the mediator, and now we're assuming that risk. We're paying the mediator and taking our chances that we're going to be able to collect.
Exactly, because in the past, if the parties didn't pay, then the mediator wouldn't get paid.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And the second thing, George, as you had mentioned earlier, is that we've made the payment process even easier and more efficient by offering direct deposit to all of our neutrals. So our mediators are getting paid faster than ever. Third, having the credential of being a FINRA mediator is valuable. As we explained earlier, we are very selective about who can join our mediator roster, and our mediators are highly respected in the field of securities mediation. Being a mediator is a competitive business, which we all know, and having the FINRA credential can give you an advantage. Our mediators are part of the preeminent mediator roster in the securities industry. And in surveys, the parties have indicated that they value FINRA mediators. For our mediators who are not yet selected by the parties, the credential can help keep the possibility open, and it may help as a marketing tool in your overall mediation practice. And fourth, we provide regular exposure for mediators with attorneys and parties in our forum. Whenever the parties ask for a list of potential mediators, we propose well-established mediators, as well as skilled FINRA mediators that the parties might not yet know, but who have the qualifications the parties need for that particular case. The parties get to know the names of these mediators, even if the parties don't select them. And they also learn about their profiles. So not only do we provide lists to parties of our mediators, we also give the parties detailed disclosure reports for each mediator. And as an aside, it's important for you to know that we encourage all of you to keep your disclosure reports updated. That disclosure report is an important tool to educate the parties about your backgrounds and your experience and why you're right to mediate their case. You'll also find a link for updating your disclosure report in the reference materials below the audio file at FINRA Dispute Resolution Mediator Information Update Form. And I just want to emphasize with the annual fee that we're charging, we really aim, as we've said, to keep it below a typical bar fee. And, you know, we do believe that there is use with the credential. For example, I'm a member of two different bar associations, and I do not litigate cases, but it definitely helps with my credentials to have that on my resume. And we hope that you'll find the same with the FINRA credential. And fifth, we promote our mediators and FINRA's mediation program with resources that are greater than most individual mediators can devote themselves. For example, we extensively market the quality of our mediators, the benefits of mediating, and the advantages of using our forum to the parties and their counsel. Sixth, our staff helps to generate cases for our mediators by reaching out to representatives in cases that we identify as ripe for mediation. During our outreach, we can save our mediators time by educating the parties about the process, getting the parties to the table, and setting up the logistics for the mediations. And we do recognize that a lot of time, that this work of communicating one-on-one with the parties can really take up a lot of time, and our staff is very dedicated and will take the time and effort and try to make it as easy as possible on our mediators. And finally, a benefit that many of our mediators appreciate having just for their peace of mind is that we provide legal representation to our neutrals if they are sued in connection with mediations performed through our forum, and we will indemnify them if they're held liable. Fortunately, I can say this issue does not come up very often because arbitrators and mediators are generally immune from liability, but the cost of defending these suits can be significant, and our mediators are grateful for the service, especially in the rare cases when they actually need to turn to us for help.
And probably also, not necessarily a lawsuit for damages, but sometimes a party may not fully respect the confidentiality aspect of a mediation and try to subpoena a mediator to testify about what happened in the mediation. And, you know, typically that's not allowed.
Yes.
But you need representation to go prove that point to a court.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, that's, I think, a valuable benefit.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, great. That's a great overview of a lot of the benefits and incentives. And I'd now like to provide our neutrals with some more details about the efforts that we make to get the parties to the table and to promote the quality of our roster. So let's turn to Leon De Leon, our National Mediation Administrator based out of the Boca Raton office, to tell us about the new Mediation Incentive Program.
Thanks, Ken. We realize that these are tough economic times for the parties, so we developed a program to address their needs to keep costs low. Essentially, we created a plan to give parties an incentive to mediate valued between $25,000 and $100,000. This is a large percentage of our open docket. We reached out to some of our mediators, like we do with the Mediation Settlement Month, and found mediators who agreed to reduce their fees 20 to 40%. Some of these cases may not even require a full day of mediation. On a case-by-case basis, we are contacting parties about mediating these mid-sized cases at a reduced mediator rate.
Great. Now, Rosari Dominic, our Senior Mediation Administrator based out of Chicago office, has been very involved in our marketing efforts. Rosari, could you describe some of those efforts that you've helped to coordinate?
Sure, Ken. This year, we created a database of over 1,600 active party representatives. We're using this database to promote our mediation program, to remind the party representatives of the option of mediating, the benefits of mediating through FINRA, and our roster of highly qualified, respected, and experienced mediators. We started by sending an eye-catching brochure reminding these active representatives of the advantages of mediating through FINRA. Then our staff followed up with telephone calls to targeted representatives. In addition to that, we identify cases on our docket that are ripe for mediation. We've learned that most parties are interested in mediating their cases within 45 days of the arbitration hearing on the merits. We send out targeted letters reminding the parties about the benefits of mediating their specific cases. Recently, we started enclosing flyers that emphasize an advantage or benefit to mediating through our program. We have had many enthusiastic calls from party representatives after sending out our mailings. Our active mediators may not be fully aware of the amount of outreach we do all the time to generate cases. Sometimes when parties contact mediators directly, it's prompted by one of our many solicitation efforts. We are more interconnected than many mediators realize.
Yeah, that's a good point, Rosari. Thanks. I'd now like to turn to Ed Ciaga. Ed's our Senior Mediation Administrator out of the New York office. And Ed, I would like you to describe some of the other ways that FINRA's mediation staff fits in.
Thank you, Ken. We help get parties to the table, in other words, to agree to mediate. Often parties who want to mediate are concerned that if they reach out directly to the other side, it may be perceived as a sign of weakness. We solve that dilemma by inviting the other side to mediate without indicating that the opposing party has expressed an interest. This tactic often opens the doors to an agreement to mediate. This is one of the services we provide all the time.
Yeah, I often get requests for that kind of service. It's really one of the most popular ways of introducing the concept of mediation. Thanks, Ed. I want to get George to talk a little bit about the way we do things on an external basis and talk about the staff's recent appearances promoting the FINRA mediation program.
Sure. Happy to talk about it, Ken. We don't limit our outreach efforts to arbitration cases currently on file. Sometimes it seems that way, but actually, FINRA mediation staff regularly speaks before various professional groups such as the American Bar Association. The Practicing Law Institute has its annual summer program this summer in August. We'll be there again. The Public Investors Arbitration Bar Association annual meeting, PIABA, will be there in October. Securities Industry and Financial Markets Association, especially the Compliance and Legal Division, Linda Feinberg was at their annual meeting in March, and other groups throughout the year. It's important to underscore we have the only mediation program in the United States that's dedicated solely to securities disputes. There is no other. And this allows us to serve as a preeminent source of expertise and experience in securities mediation. This is what we do. When we speak at these forums, we not only promote the mediation program, but probably of more importance, the quality of FINRA mediators. You know, at the end of the day, the mediation program is only as good as the mediators that serve, and that is really where the rubber meets the road in any kind of a mediation program. Besides speaking engagements, our website is also an important part of our outreach efforts. We get lots of hits on the FINRA website, and the dispute resolution part of the website has lots of informative and educational materials for parties and representatives. A couple of examples. Webcasts. An important example, we recently added two new webcast videos on our webpage, one designed for investors and the other designed for firms, and they show parties what they can expect from the FINRA dispute resolution process. You know, sometimes it's a little scary the first time. It's always more helpful to actually understand what you're going to be experiencing, and the webcasts are a pretty good representation of how that process works. In fact, I think Julie is in one of them, and you'll see her having heard her voice now.
This is true.
They're fairly short, you know, 25-minute videos, and they include a sample mediation and a sample arbitration so parties can view the process from the inside. I will tell you now, most mediations and arbitrations don't get resolved in 25 minutes. So they're representative of the process. And they're really a plain English explanation of what to expect from the processes and how they differ, how mediation differs from arbitration. They're very often a party who's done lots of arbitrations then goes to his or her first mediation, and there comes a point where the mediator does something called a caucus, which is a timeout when the mediator says, look, I really like to speak to one side, so could you get out of the room while I speak to the other side? Now, if all you've ever done are arbitrations, that would be a scary, alarming prospect for the neutral to say, you know, get out, I want to talk to your adversary, but it's perfectly normal in mediation. So by looking at the video webcast, you understand that's a normal part of the process. The link to the webcast appears below the audio file again under FINRA what investors can expect from FINRA's dispute resolution process. We're also developing other promotional activities that are designed to increase the visibility and recognition of proven FINRA mediators who agree to mediate all of their securities mediation cases through our forum. Let me underscore that again. FINRA mediators who agree to mediate all of their securities mediation cases through the forum, and we'll keep you informed of details on that as they develop. Finally, you know, speaking of our webpage, there's a brand new addition that I'd like to call to your attention. Thanks to a grant from the FINRA Investor Education Foundation, the Pace Law School Investor Rights Clinic has just published something called The Investor's Guide to Securities Industry Disputes. It's a hands-on, plain English guide to the processes, including mediation, how they work. And the part I like best is it starts with how to prevent disputes before it gets to resolving them. So I recommend that to you. The link appears below the audio file. It's worth looking at and downloading. Lots of plain English information on both processes. Ken?
Great. Thanks, George. That highlights a lot of resources, not only for neutrals, but for attorneys and their clients. So I think that can be helpful. Now, getting back to the cases, Leon, I would like you to talk a little bit about how we connect related cases and reach out to some of the top mediators to handle these complex mediations.
Yes, of course. Thank you, Ken. The mediation staff is constantly looking for patterns in cases that might make sense to group because they involve the same broker-dealer or law firm. When we reach out to law firms and brokerage firms and find that they are often amenable to mediation, they know that FINRA mediation can quickly assemble a list of mediators and arrange a mediation. We also adjust our fees so that grouping the cases makes financial sense to the parties. We help pair these clusters of often complex cases into global mediations with mediators on a roster who have expertise in handling these types of matters.
All right, so Ed, Leon talked about quickly. How fast is fast?
Well, under the right circumstances, we can coordinate mediations very quickly. We can set up a mediation as little as 3 days if needed. I may have set a record the other day when I talked to parties securing a mediator for them in 13 minutes. I didn't plan it, but it happened, so I'm making a note of that. My work was not done, but I definitely helped parties move toward a solution quicker than they would have on their own.
All right, 13 minutes is pretty fast. Well, what's another specific example of how you help get the parties to the table to mediate a case?
Okay, recently I received a call from an attorney who represented a broker. His client had filed a claim for wrongful termination against the firm. The broker was really upset and angry. The attorney said he thought this case would be a good candidate for mediation, but wanted some suggestions on how to encourage his client to mediate and be, you know, realistic about what the settling the case really meant. So the attorney wanted me to contact the brokerage firm and, you know, basically to gain their agreement to mediate without the firm's knowledge that the broker was interested. He was concerned that indicating his client wanted to mediate would signal a position of weakness, and that's, you know, that's one of the things that I get involved in.
Is that a New York case, by the way?
Yeah, that's what I love, New York case.
New York parties don't want to indicate any weakness. We know that.
Right. So the firm not only agreed to mediate, but also agreed to pay for the cost of the mediation, and the case did settle, in fact. The point I'm making is that FINRA's staff broke the ice and helped two parties agree to mediate their case. If left on their own, they probably would have ended up arbitrating, and it was scheduled for several hearings.
Yeah, probably saved quite a bit of time and money.
That's right.
So, Leon, let's go back to the basics for a little bit. And if you could, remind our neutrals about the two different ways we get mediation cases.
Sure. We have two ways that parties come to mediate at FINRA. The first is when a party has not filed an arbitration case and comes directly to us asking to mediate a dispute. We call these cases straight-in mediations. We contact the other party to explain the process and see if they agree to mediate. Last year, we processed over 400 straight-in mediation requests, and the parties agreed to mediate approximately 10% of them. The other type of mediations we have are cases that start out as FINRA arbitration cases that we convert to mediations. Last year, we had parties in over 450 arbitration cases agreeing to mediate their disputes.
So what's the staff's next step after the parties have agreed to mediate?
Next, the parties need to select a mediator and decide on location for the mediation. We facilitate both tasks. Our mediation administrators supervise and administer the case from its initial stages to its conclusion, ensuring a smooth transition from arbitration to mediation, and addressing any individual needs that arise during the life of the mediation case.
Right, just to add to that, to be more specific, we coordinate scheduling and logistics so the mediators can focus on mediating. Also, if any parties are unfamiliar with the mediation process, we take the time to explain how the mediation process works. FINRA provides conference space that includes video conferencing at FINRA's New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., and Boca Raton offices. There's no extra charges for these facilities, which can significantly reduce travel costs. If the parties prefer to meet somewhere else, we can help them find an alternative space, sometimes at a discounted rate.
Yeah, that can be helpful.
Absolutely.
So, Rosari, can you give us an example of how you helped the parties stick to the process after they agreed to mediate?
Yes. Recently, I had a situation where the parties had all agreed to mediate. But as they moved closer to agreeing on a mediator, it was clear something else was beginning to unravel the party's agreement. One party finally confided that certain discovery documents had been promised before the mediation convened. Their arbitrator had actually ordered these documents to be produced quite a while ago. Some documents were delivered piecemeal, but each delivery revealed the complete request had not been fulfilled. This added to the frustration of the attorney waiting for the documents, and he was quickly becoming to the conclusion that he was the opposing side was being disingenuous. He was about to back out of the mediation. When I learned of this party's concerns, I phoned the opposing side and to discuss the situation, and there was some give and take, but both sides were finally satisfied and the mediation was back on track. The mediator and the parties thanked me for my assistance with ensuring that the mediation took place.
So it sounds like you helped them out by shepherding things along the way and keeping things on track. That's great. So, Ed, what's another way that FINRA actively promotes mediation to the parties?
I'm glad you asked that question, Ken. FINRA Dispute Resolution invites parties to join us in celebrating the benefits of mediating during our annual mediation settlement month in October. We reduce the cost of mediating, which allows us to do several things. One is introducing parties to mediation for the first time. This is one of the things we really emphasize on, trying to get parties to experience a mediation is key to our program. We also provide more exposure to mediators who agree to reduce their rates. And third, we convert more arbitrations into mediation cases to resolve the cases faster. This program fits in with our belief in the value of mediation as an effective option for resolving cases, and it can help preserve investor confidence. another program that we were involved in. Each year we also play a big role in organizing another event called Mediation Settlement Day, which also, by the way, happens to take place each year in October. It unites mediation providers and raises awareness of the mediation benefits through the special programs designed to educate potential parties and attorneys about the mediation process.
Well, thanks, Ed. That's a great recap. I want to turn back to Rosari, and if you could, take a look at some of the practical advantages of FINRA's mediation program. Tell us how FINRA's mediation rules provide a benefit to mediators that they don't have outside of FINRA.
Well, two benefits are unique to FINRA, our mediation submission agreement and our ability to enforce settlements. We ensure that everyone signs the mediation submission agreement. In the submission agreement, the parties, counsel, and the mediator agree to abide by FINRA's mediation rules, including confidentiality. The submission agreement also specifies the mediator's fees. In rare cases, a firm or associated person may not honor a settlement agreement. When the parties in a FINRA mediation sign a settlement agreement and a FINRA firm or associated person fails to pay the agreed-upon amount, the opposing party can request that FINRA initiate expedited suspension proceedings pursuant to FINRA rules. FINRA will send a warning letter informing the breaching party that FINRA will suspend the party from doing business unless it complies with the settlement agreement, and when necessary, FINRA suspends the breaching party. You can review a copy of our mediation submission agreement at the link below the audio file. It's labeled FINRA Forms and Tools.
Great. Thanks, Rosari. So what I'd like to do now is use one of those famous mediator techniques and summarize what we've covered. The arbitration caseload has been increasing significantly, both in 2008 and 2009, and it usually takes several months before we see an increase in mediation cases. So we're anticipating that increase in the mediation case filings to begin soon. Starting September 1st, we're instituting a simplified fee structure for our mediators. Remember, it's a $200 annual fee and the reduced flat fee of $150 from the fees that our mediators charge the parties from the FINRA mediations. But in exchange, FINRA mediators get, first, immediate payment for their services and the option of direct deposit into their private bank accounts, the value of that FINRA credential, exposure to the stream of FINRA's existing and new case filings, FINRA's visible marketing efforts designed to enhance the reputation of the FINRA mediators, and the assistance of FINRA's mediation administrators. Also, they get access to mediate in FINRA's facilities and those enforceable settlement agreements and indemnification.
Thanks, Ken. Well, this is George Friedman again. I think this concludes our workshop today. Feel free to email any questions you may have about the workshop or really any of our dispute resolution programs and services. The email address for the FINRA DR call-in workshops is also shown below today's audio file. Before we sign off, I want to thank our on-the-air staff, Ken, Julie, Leon, Rosari, and Ed, for sharing their knowledge and experience with you here today and for tolerating my questions. I also want to thank some behind-the-scenes folks who did not appear on the air but played an important role in putting this together, specifically Dave Carey of our FINRA Case Administration Department and also Suzanne Green of our Neutral Management Department. Thanks, guys. We hope you enjoyed today's program and found it informative. We look forward to the next Neutral Workshop, which we expect to post on our website sometime after the summer. Please don't ask me the topics. There's so much going on, I can't begin to imagine or predict what the topic will be, but I'm sure it'll be interesting and informative and probably something we haven't conceived of today. I want to thank you for your continued support in our joint effort to ensure investor protection and market integrity. That's what it's all about. It's what we do every day, and we shouldn't lose sight of that. So thank you very much. Have a great rest of the summer, and again, thanks for joining us.